Now, Mark Richard Nietzsche, all funded and under the instruction of the Rothschilds, the idea was, and this all links again through the Weishaupt area coming down through Mazzini, that those that direct the overall conspiracy can use the differences in so-called ideologies to enable them to divide larger and larger factions of the human race into opposing camps so that they could be armed and then brainwashed into fighting and destroying each other, and particularly in destroying all political and religious institutions. Now, the other aspect is, we know now that communism is not really any difference with capitalism, because what they tell you, like with anything, is a lie, but what they actually do with communism is it's supposed to be state control at the top. Well, you just need to look at Russia, where they had one lane on all the roads that only the government officials could use.
That's right.
And, you know, so this is equality amongst people, and all these people at the top were from this community. We talked about the Russian Revolution and the high percentages of this group. And they just tell the people we're all equal. So it's just shown the development of this, and it's just amazing to see how many people don't realise Karl Marx's true background.
Well, you know, we know it, and now the listeners know it as well. So let's move on here to, let's get on to 1849 here. This guy, Gödel Schumper, Meyer Rothschild's wife dies. Gödel Schumper.
Yeah, I've always wondered how to pronounce that. I think Gödel Schumper or something.
Schumper, right.
Yeah, because this is Daddy Rothschild, the first one.
Yeah.
He started off Bauer. Before she died, she made a famous comment, which was, "If my sons did not want wars, there would be none."
Well, that says everything she needs to tell everybody, because now everyone knows that. And it's interesting, Andrew, you know, you and I have proven that this is no longer just a Rothschild-inspired crime gang or crime wave. What has happened is this thing has morphed into a very large, a lumbering criminal gang that kind of imposes its will on everything and anything. Now, of course, they're the biggest you know, hat pin on the hat, but they're not the only one, huh?
No, absolutely, and you know, the network gets wider and wider, and when you consider, you see, I think when people think Rothschild family, they're thinking of, well, there's one in London, there's one in France, what have you. What you have to realise is that not only did you have the all the brothers, you had another six sisters.
Yeah.
Now they all went somewhere.
That's right.
And it's very difficult to find information about them. So if they all went all over there in, say, 1800,
yeah,
and they married into all these other wealthy families, which is what they were doing, then they all had children. You know, how big is this network? They could all be completely blood-linked, you know, trace their ancestry back, and they'll all have different names. Some will have, you know,
Warburg, Schiff, Oppenheimer. Yeah.
Yeah, some will have English-sounding names. You know, where does the Bush line come in, for example? You know, they should all be linked through that area because of this genealogy, and the female line is something I've been really trying to trace, but the information is just so difficult to get.
Yeah.
And I think that, and my view is a lot of them were sent over to America because they realised the potential of that place. You know, it was such a large landmass, and they should have such control over there.
Well, let's go on to 1852 here. Now, we're skipping things, ladies and gentlemen. You can, when you get the book, there's still a lot of meat and potatoes in between the things we discuss here. So understand that reading this and listening to it is not identical. We meta-text things that we skim over here, but this is a great book, very in-depth in many areas. Future British Prime Minister William Gladstone states the following about the Bank of England. What is that?
He said, this is when he started off as the Chancellor of the Exchequer, which is the job that Gordon Brown had before he became Prime Minister, to put it into perspective.
And what Gordon Brown's job before he was Exchequer was pedophile in chief, wasn't it?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
That's certainly what the evidence points at.
Yeah.
It says, from the time I took office as Chancellor of the Exchequer, I began to learn that the state held, in the face of the bank and the city, an essentially false position as to finance. The government itself was not to be a substantive power, but was to leave the money power supreme and unquestioned.
Yeah, well, you know, you do get the admissions from these people, and this is why there's always a trail of them actually admitting to the conspiracy, and this is why when anybody tries to say it's not them, it's some other group, it's nonsense, because we've got so many admissions from people on the inside that this is what's going on, that it's undeniable, Andrew, absolutely undeniable. We go back into Sassoon again. What happens here in 1853?
Well, he becomes a naturalized British citizen because he was sort of the Rothschild drug dealer over in China. His son was christened Abdullah, changes his name to Albert, and goes on to have a son, Edward Albert, who marries directly into the main central Rothschild line. Sassoon builds synagogues in India, and that's really there's another area I think that we might come on to with him as well.
Well, there's a lot of there's a lot of information coming to my desktop here that India is a very powerful stronghold for Jewish money and interests, and that right now the Rothschild fortunes are over in India in force. Trying to reconstruct that country into a major world power as we speak, possibly the next parasitic location for their crime gang. Let's move on then here and talk about we talk about the death of a lot of these crime members through 1854. I'll read them off and we'll move past it. Carolyn Stern, Solomon Meyer Rothschild's wife, dies. Now, Carolyn Stern, her family was a big contributor, the Stern family, to New York University. Now, the Stern School of Business, it's the number three or four business school in the world for finance, and of course it was financed, the school was paid for by Stern money. We got the Klansman Karl Meyer Rothschild dies. Then we've got Solomon Meyer Rothschild dying. And then we got Amstel Meyer Rothschild dying. All within a year of each other here. Now let's move on then. We got 1856 in May, psychologist Sigmund Freud.
Yep, he's born this year. And I think you should really sum up what Freud was about. When his job was really to attack Western morality, he criticised what he regarded as Western, as the neurotic emphasis on sex of Western people, and he promoted the ideas of incest and paedophilia as normal in so-called things that men think about, etc., etc., which really just was an idea of lowering the morals and that of the nations that his work was promoted in, which of course now is all over the world, and anybody who hears the word psychiatrist, they generally associate it with Freud, as if, you know, he's worked out how the human mind's supposed to work, when really his job was just to lower the morals of society to help this group along its way.
He was a cocaine addict, and he was a filthy pedophile in his own right, and he's Sigmund Freud, is what his name is. Sigmund Freud. And now let's go into 58 here. We got Lionel de Rothschild finally takes a seat in the Parliament. Now, this is interesting because very rarely do we actually see Rothschilds very active in as upfront men. Their name usually stayed in the halls of power, but not in the seats of power.
No, that's right, and I think that this one was probably, you know, he wasn't in the main business area, and he was just using his influence. He fancied being a he fancied being a politician or a member of parliament, and so that's what he chose and that's what he got. They blocked him for a while because you have to take, at that point, you had to take an oath that you were a Christian. But he wouldn't do that, so when he got the rules changed so he could take the oath to the Jewish faith, then he came in. But on July the 12th of that year, Lord Harrington in the House of Lords, opposing the admission of Jewish immigrants to England, said the following. He said, "They are the great moneylenders and loan contractors of the world, i.e. they cause depressions. The consequence is that the nations of the world are groaning under heavy systems of taxation and national debt. They have ever been the greatest enemies of freedom."
Well, bully to you there, Lord Harrington. You know, another unsung hero that we don't hear very much about. Good for him. Let's skip over to 1860 here. American South. Now, there's already a lot of rumblings in the South. Now, interesting when we start finding out just how much influence the South was under Rothschild. In other words, they knew they couldn't get the bank in through Washington, D.C., so they were going to do some other things. They were going to break the country apart and come in some other way, huh?
Oh, definitely. What they were doing was there was a close business relationship between the cotton-growing aristocracy and the cotton manufacturers in England.
Yep.
And the cotton was delivered from America to France and Britain on Rothschild-owned ships. And they decided that this was America's Achilles heel, if you like, where they had the central bank before, they were trying to get it back. The southern states of America contained a great number of Rothschild agents that they put in there over time. Now, they manipulated the population by conspiring with local politicians and spreading propaganda amongst the people. This resulted in the secession of South Carolina on December the 29th of 1860. Only a few weeks later, another six states joined the conspiracy against the Union and formed a breakaway union called the Confederate States of America, with Jefferson Davis as its president. And then the Rothschild agents, in order to provoke the North, raid armies, seize forts, arsenals, mints, and other Union property. Even members of President Buchanan's cabinet at the time conspired to destroy the Union by damaging the public credit and working to bankrupt the nation. Buchanan claimed to deplore succession, but took no steps to check it, even when the United States ship is fired upon by South Carolina shore batteries. So this is how it all comes about. This is the, you know, the money line. This is the real how you know the Civil War was going to come about.
Well, we've got actually in 1861, after the inauguration of Lincoln, we've got the Civil War underway. Now let's talk about what he says about slavery here, because everybody thinks the Civil War was fought over slavery, which I've known a long time that was only a ancillary fact about the war, but in fact the war was fought for very different reasons than that in its inception. So let's talk about that.
Well, what President Lincoln actually stated was, he said, "I have no purpose, directly or indirectly, to interfere with the institution of slavery in the state where it now exists. I believe I have no lawful right to do so, and I have no inclination to do so. My paramount objective is to save the Union, and it is not either to save or destroy slavery. If I could save the Union without freeing any slave, I would do it." And so again, this is the sort of quotes that are out there that you never talk. And another quote here from Otto von Bismarck, who was talking about what happened here. He said, "The division of the United States into federations of equal force was decided long before the Civil War by the high financial powers of Europe. These bankers were afraid that the United States, if they remained as one bloc and as one nation, would attain economic and financial independence, which would upset their financial domination over the world. The voice of the Rothschilds predominated. They foresaw the tremendous booty if they could substitute two feeble democracies indebted to the financiers to the vigorous republic, confident and self-providing. Therefore, they started their emissaries in order to exploit the question of slavery and thus dig an abyss between the two parts of the republic."
Well, it worked for them, and the war was underway, and of course, it pitted brother against brother and family against family in different parts of the country, and of course, percentage-wise, it was the most costly war in the history of North America. But that being said, there were also agents within the South's financial, Jefferson Davis's finance minister, in fact, was discovered to be a direct Rothschild employee, if I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, but Lincoln was a guy, a pragmatist, although he, you know, a brilliant man. Obviously, if you read his writings, the guy was the most eloquent president, at least with a pen, that we ever saw, we've ever seen. But at the same time, you know, I mean, compare this man's writing to the moron we have in there now, and it's just frightening. The fact is that he was up against two sides of a problem here. If he did not free slavery, he was going to have one outcome that was negative. If he did, he had another one out. It was terrible. So the only thing that he had to do was to fight it out to the end. And I wonder, you know, what this this burning and destruction of the South when the generals were told to burn down swaths of the South, that made way for the carpetbaggers, and those carpetbaggers almost were exclusively criminal Zionist Jews who moved into the South trying to take advantage of the anarchy and upheaval. And we to this day do not identify carpetbaggers as Zionist Jews, but they were.
Yes, I mean there's lots of evidence for that, and these are the agents in there. It's a bit like the sort of all this reconstruction of Iraq you see at the moment, and you look at all the names involved there, and you know, making money out of the misery of people in war.
Well, and Lincoln began printing his own American currency at this point. And this has really got these guys upset. But of course, he gets away with printing $450 million worth, which is nearly a half a billion. And it seems to work. In fact, I've read many places where America's technology advanced markedly above the rest of the world, especially in military hardware during that period.
Yes, that's right, and it's interesting to see, we won't go through his statements, suffice to say that he said that the government has the right to do it, and they're going to do it, because he was offered loans by these Rothschilds at ridiculous rates of interest, like 28-30%, so he printed his own money, and in that year, the Times of London published a story, and they said, and this is talking about the printing of money, if that mischievous financial policy, which had its origin in the North American Republic, should become indurated down to a fixture, then the government will furnish its own money without cost. It will pay off debts and be without a debt. It will have all the money necessary to carry on its commerce. It will become prosperous beyond precedent in the history of civilized governments of the world. The brains and the wealth of all our countries will go to North America. That government must be destroyed, or it will destroy every monarchy on the globe. So what they're basically saying is, you know, if you don't pay us debt for money that we've created, it's a bad thing. It's just so, you know, Eustace Mullins made this comment before, that if we hadn't had these people, we'd have had a golden age, and I think that this statement really, they admit that themselves, that we would have had a golden age.
Well, yeah, let's talk about who came to our aid, and really, in so doing, set his country up for a terrible retribution at the hands of these crooks in 1863. Let's talk about what the Tsar of Russia, Alexander II, did.
Well, he'd been having problems with the Rothschilds, and this goes right back to 1815, where they tried to get their first kind of joint UN type thing together, joining a load of nations together, and he vetoed it, and they weren't happy then. And Abraham Lincoln actually went to him for help, and he ordered that if either England or France intervene in the American Civil War and help the South, then Russia would consider such an action a declaration of war and take the side of President Lincoln. To show that he wasn't messing about, he sent part of his Pacific Fleet to port in San Francisco and another part to port in New York.
That's punctuating things, isn't it? That's a punctuation. Well, and I think the Russians at that time had the largest and probably the most extensive military machine in the world.
Mm.
Well, that's good bully for you. Another hero here, Tsar Alexander II, should be venerated in the minds of patriots worldwide. We've got President Lincoln is reelected. Now, this is interesting because I'm certain they wanted to do everything in their power to stop his reelection, but again, he was reelected, and fortunately for us, he was. But in 1864, is there anything important about that with this guy, August Belmont?
Well, August Belmont, we talked about earlier, and how he was sent over by the Rothschilds, I think it was 1837, and now we find that he is the Democratic Party's national chairman, and supported General George McClellan as the Democratic nominee to run against Lincoln, but Lincoln won the election. So it just goes to show, this guy just comes over, and suddenly a few years down the line, he's in charge of the, he's the chairman of the opposing party.
Yeah, Rahm Emanuel comes to mind, huh?
Exactly, yeah. This is the thing about history, and this is what, you know, we do on the French Connection. The historical work that's out there, it's literally just repeated over time. The same stories are played out over time, and it's only the names that change, but they still have that same that same element behind them.
Yeah, well, let's talk again about this guy McGreer from Canada, who actually came out and said that Lincoln was killed not by just some guy named Booth, but by interest of the Rothschild banking fortune, and that he made the statement in a Canadian parliamentary session. And what was the upshot of all that?
Well, what he said was, he said Abraham Lincoln, the murdered emancipator of the slaves, was assassinated through the machinations of a group representative of the international bankers who feared the United States president's national credit, i.e. printing their own money ambitions, printing money for Americans by Americans. There was only one group in the world at that time who had any reason to desire the death of Lincoln. They were the men opposed to his national currency program and who had fought him throughout the whole Civil War on his policy of greenback currency.
Well, that's where the name greenback came from during that period, ladies and gentlemen. So if you want to know where the greenback was from, it was from the period of Lincoln printing American money for American people without a usury to it. It was not a debt-based system, but rather a lubricant for economic growth, which we could one day have again if all of us work hard together. There is so much here on the war. We will allow that to be left to the minds of the readers in the future, or if people want to get deeper into it. Let's go here now to 1868.
Mm.
And what's the importance of that? It's the death of Jacob Meyer Rothschild. Now, he's the last of the sons of the original Bauer Rothschild conversion, is he not?
He is, yes. Then he got into the, he was quite into the wine industry. He bought Chateau Lafite, which was one of the four great premier Grand Cru estates of France. And we just see that area as well now. You can even get sort of, you have these Rothschild vineyards. You probably saw, I don't know if you have the wine over there.
Well, of course you do. Bordeaux's a good 50% of the wine coming out of Bordeaux, especially their top brands, are either Rothschild owned directly or Rothschild controlled. So, and we have a family Rothschild in Bordeaux, which is a very powerful influence in this country, all over it, including in the Orient Lodge structure and the rest. But let's go on here to this rabbi here, Simon Ben-Lur, Rabbi Richlorn, whatever his name is. What does he say?
He said it was a funeral Rabbi Reichhorn. He said, thanks to the terrible power of our international banks, we have forced the Christians into wars without number. Wars have a special value for Jews, since Christians massacre each other and make more room for us Jews. Wars are the Jews' harvest. The Jew banks grow fat on Christian wars. Over 100 million Christians have been swept off the face of the earth by wars, and the end is not yet. Well, he got that right, because of all the other wars that they set up since then, just say, well, World War I and World War II alone. The wars just got bigger and bigger, and interestingly, they always fought between these supposedly Christian races.
Well, it's again, these guys are the orchestrators. They're the guys in the center there swinging the baton and getting everybody to fight with each other, and it's still happening today. And we're inflicting terrible damage on innocent people worldwide as a result of these criminals, and it's time to make that problem stop, ladies and gentlemen. So, Nathan Rothschild dies. Now, let's go. An American general named Albert Pike. Now, why is Albert Pike? Let's see, everybody thinks Albert Pike was not influenced by Jewish and Zionist money. We'll find Colonel House in the names of these people as well, and he got involved in all kinds of things in the government. But Colonel House and Albert Pike were both up to their eyeballs in Zionist criminal Judaism and their agents. Am I right in that?
Yes. So I mean, you just need to look at what he's put a blueprint together here. And he's come straight out of the Illuminati, and his blueprint was for three world wars. And what he said was the First World War was to be fought for the purpose of destroying the Tsar in Russia, which is something that Nathan Mayer Rothschild promised in 1815. The Tsar is to be replaced with communism, which is to be used to attack religions, predominantly Christianity. The differences between the British and German empires are to be used to foment this war. The Second World War is to be used to foment the controversy between fascism and political Zionism, with the oppression of the Jews in Germany a linchpin in bringing hatred against the German people. This is designed to destroy fascism and increase the power of political Zionism. This war is also designed to increase the power of communism to the level that it equaled that of United Christendom. And then the Third World War was to be played out by stirring up hatred of the Muslim world for the purposes of playing the Islamic world and the political Zionists off against each other. Whilst this is going on, the remaining nations would be forced to fight themselves into a state of mental, physical, spiritual and economic exhaustion. And this is exactly what he was saying then, and it plays out very well.
Well, Pike also writes about nihilism. Now, of course, our moral compass has been completely destroyed, and we are nihilists. We believe in nothing today. We're not grounded in morality. We're not grounded in honor. We're not grounded in honesty. What we're grounded in today is a fleeting moment of gratification that in the end is unsatisfying. And people walk around from event to event and experience to experience and never feel like they are exercising any human warmth or kindness or love or connection. And it's the loss of these needed feelings that we all demand as human beings that have kept us in such a state of disarray. We've lost our compass. We've lost our ability to find our human roots. And this is through nihilism, and he talks about it. Why don't you tell us what he says about this?
Well, what he's saying here is we shall unleash the nihilists and the atheists, and we shall provoke a great social cataclysm in which, in all its horror, will show clearly to all the nations the effect of absolute atheism, the origins of savagery in the most bloody turmoil. Then everywhere the people will be forced to defend themselves against the world minority of the world revolutionaries, and will exterminate those destroyers of civilizations and the multitudes disillusioned with Christianity, whose spirits will be from that moment without direction and leadership and anxious for an ideal, but without knowledge where to send its adoration, will receive the true light through the universal manifestation of the pure doctrine of Lucifer brought finally out into public view. He's just a complete crackpot, this guy. And Again, we just have to see what you just said there, Darryl. I mean, this is it. What we see today, everything that was once considered bad is now considered good.
Yeah, let's get a tattoo and pierce our head and, I don't know what they're doing today. God, goodness only knows, they're trying to pass off the idea that sex with animals is okay if the animal doesn't complain. I mean,
I heard about that. It's ridiculous, isn't it? Absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah, unbelievable. So we come here to now to the 1872. There's more on Albert Pike in the book, but we're going to move on here to Giuseppe Mancini's death, and then what does this portend for us?
Well, Mancini is basically succeeded by a guy called Adrian Lemmy.
Yep.
Lemmy is then succeeded by Lenin, Trotsky, and then Stalin. And this is where you start to see this sort of, going down. They're taking the Illuminati, if you like, is taking the communism route. Certainly through the leaders that are followed through Weishaupt, Mazzini, Lemmy, then through down to Lenin. So it's just really indicating there the Illuminati line, if you like. But there will be another line, which is manipulating the capitalist route as well. But this is just following tracing the link between Lenin that goes back to Weishaupt.
Well, again, now let's go on here to talk about Rio Tinto, because I know that Phelps Dodge, Rio Tinto, Barrick, all of major mining companies, Anglo-American, Asante, all of them, doesn't matter what they pull out of the ground, they are either directly or indirectly owned or controlled by this criminal gang, are they not?
Well, it certainly seems to me in all the research that I've done, and it's just another indicator here of they're now getting hold of the Rio Tinto copper mines in Spain.
Yeah.
And at that time, they were Europe's largest source of copper.
Yeah. Well, and they're still doing it. They're not. They haven't changed any of their plans with the resource control, and also they get the they have the ability to control the price at the market sale point, so any investor or any company that wishes to go it alone can never get any traction on ownership, because the people selling into the marketplace are the same criminal gang. So if you're an independent, you don't have any chance of succeeding as an independent, because these people control not only the production side, but the market and sales side. So they end up taking over your holdings because they've controlled the marketplace, which is a standard scam, a standard robbery that they've been using forever. Last year here, last one, and it's important because there's a lot of things that happened in 1875 here. Why don't you go into what Schiff does and Solomon Loeb. Go ahead into this.
Well, the reason Schiff was the two Loeb and Co. bank was he actually married Solomon Loeb's daughter, Teresa. He then financed the Standard Oil Company of John D. Rockefeller, who the evidence I've understood undercover was a crypto Jew, financed the Harriman Railroad and the Carnegie Steel Empire. And of course, this is all with the Rothschild money.
Yeah.
He identified that the other largest bankers, he identified the other bankers in America at that time who were significant. That was J.P. Morgan, who controlled Wall Street, the Drexels and the Biddles of Philadelphia. And all the other bankers, you see, they get control of what they need to get control of to make the other people dance to their tune. And the other bankers, they knew if they got control of these ones, then they would be able to essentially control banking in New York and then America, which is what they did. So they got the European Rothschilds to set up European branches of these three banks, on the understanding that Schiff would be that boss of New York. So the bankers took the deal, and that was that.
Well, we've come to the end of this segment, and I got to say, there is a lot more in between here that we have just kind of run over, because well for time and for consolidation, and we want to leave a little bit to the reader to entice them into the to the act of reading, because so few people these days actually pick up a book and actually read something. Andrew, you know, the story does not get it doesn't get easier to swallow as you go down the years here, and but it, what it does is proves to me that we've been on the right track from the beginning. And I got to tell you, you've been instrumental in educating tens of thousands of people worldwide, Andrew.
Well, I'd say the same to you, Darrell. I mean, I got into this stuff through, it was really when I was listening to you as I was getting into this stuff. And then we started corresponding, and at the same time I was listening to, I started off with Alex Jones and stuff like that, and it didn't take me long to realise what a liar he was. So yeah, I think it's good if we can all do our bit to get this out. I can never think of any other way apart from, you know, really trying to push the information and getting more and more people to become aware of it. And I just encourage listeners to do the same.
Well, you know, people have stopped actually giving us a hand over here again, and you know, it's interesting that months pass and what we need to keep going on the French Connection is an ever-present situation for us, and I hope everybody can keep us in mind when they buy a cup of coffee and they say, oh, well, what the heck, why don't I save the money from the coffee and send it to Darrell over at the French Connection so we can keep doing this work, because you know, when we're off the radar screen here for a short period, everybody forgets the French Connection is not an advertised company here. We don't advertise. We don't sell books. We don't do anything. Have I ever made a single dime of any books that you've ever sold, Andrew?
Absolutely not, Darrell.
Well, I don't sell anybody's books. I don't sell anything here. I'm not selling anything. I'm offering facts and evidence for people to do with it as they will. And I certainly need their help. And you know, as this economic problem gets tougher, it's getting tougher for the French Connection to stay afloat. So I hope everybody keeps us in mind the next time they buy a cup of coffee or can help us. And still looking for that big benefactor out there. If somebody comes into wanting to really help us out, why don't they do that? Because we could use it. As for you, Andrew, we've got a single installment left. I hope that won't be the last time you are a guest on this program. I hope we can continue our friendship and our work together. But I do know that this is a trying and difficult thing to do, and it wears me out. I got to be honest with you. I get sick of reading the horrible threats and lies and nonsense they put out there about me. It gets wearing, but hey, I got to do it. I'm in this situation because I'm compelled to try and stop this. Why I'm compelled is I guess I'm a little bit kooky for doing it, but what the heck, I've got to do it. Remember this, everybody. If they're trying to kill the messenger, maybe the message is worth listening to. That's all I can tell you. Andrew, do you want to give a farewell statement to everybody?
Well, I'd just like to encourage them again to bear Darrell in mind. I always say to people that if it's a choice between getting my book or donating to Darrell, please donate to Darrell. The book is up there for free anyway to read. There's only one more segment to go up now. And you never miss the water till the well runs dry, and if you just look at all the information on the French Connection and suddenly you find that that's not there anymore, then it's going to be a loss to this, I think the most major loss to getting the truth out on the internet basis. I don't know any other site that has any of that sort of quality of information. So if the listeners want to contact me, they know my site is www.thesynagogueofsatan.com. You can get a signed copy from me. And if they want to go to, they're not worried about that, they can get it directly from amazon.com. And it's on a few of those sites. But yeah, thank you for listening.
Well, you know, Andrew, I'm hoping that people do wake up. I'm encouraging them to make mirror sights of mine. I would like everybody to know that there is going to come a time in the very near future, and I think it's probably a month and a half away, probably September, they're going to try to take the IamTheWitness.com site down. That's because legislation being shoved through the French National Assembly here is going to stop my site from being published at all, and that will happen. But if there are mirror sites around the world that have taken the information and put it up on sites everywhere, it will just multiply the message out there. So consider that. And again, remember me when you go for that cup of coffee. I could sure use the help. And until the next time, take care of your families. Tough times are ahead. Get hunkered down with some good supplies. Look into the eyes of your family members and get close again. Look back into history to find out what a moral compass is really about, and try to reestablish that in your family ties. And take care of yourselves. Until the next time, this is Daryl Bradford Smith telling you all, please be well.
I'm feeling mighty lonesome, haven't slept a wink. I walk the floor and watch the door, and in between I drink black coffee. Love's a hand-me-down brew. I'll never know a Sunday in this weekday room. I'm talking to the shadows, 1 o'clock to four, and Lord, how slow the moments go when all I do is pour black coffee. Since the blues caught my I'm hanging out on Monday, my Sunday dreams to dry. Now a man is born to go a-loving, a woman's born to weep and fret, and stay cigarettes. I'm moaning all the morning, morning all the night, and in between is nicotine and not much heart to fight. Coffee, feeling low as the ground. It's driving me crazy, this waiting for my baby to maybe